what I critical issues. On that note, I thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wonderful. Thank you very much. Can you assist them to go to 227? I think they... Yeah, I just direct them there. That's where they're supposed to be. Yeah, I've got many questions here, but let me reserve them for now and allow members to talk. Members, you heard what the provincial commissioner said, and you heard what Mr. Murema from ICD said. Now, let me open the floor for questions by colleagues. Honorable Diale, Honorable Dr. Van Herden, Honorable Manyosi, Honorable Mahota, Honorable Mzizi, Honorable Leroux, Honorable Ntuli, Honorable West, Honorable Nyanda, all of us. Honorable Museki and Honorable Kaliti, all of us. In that order, if you remember the order. Dr. Diane.
Mson Perry, Honorable Chairperson, if I listened well, I would remark that although at the end of this, take a route of exoneration or not exoneration, but what is serious here, if really I understood well, what is serious with that station is to place a female detainee with a male detainee. That is very serious and inhuman. That shouldn't happen. If that is, if I listened very well, it's serious and inhuman. There's no human beings who can do that. If that happens, it's definitely there's something wrong with the police at that particular station. Mr. Mann is not a question. Is this remark? It's very serious. We've been prisoners throughout the period. We have never seen such things happening. I was a prisoner for almost 8 years. I've never seen such. I've traveled about 12 prisons in the Republic of South Africa during that period of apartheid. But I've never seen such things. Now, these things happen at a time of our new demography, which is very serious. I think if that is the case, those who did that should be undergoing a severe discipline, not expelling them as such, but severe discipline. You know, in the past, when a soldier or whatever police was committed an error, any indiscipline, was taken to be given a very serious discipline, where he wear an overcoat, you know, all the necessary things in his body, and it makes him to jump like hell. Not to expel him. I mean, it's a human, they are human beings. They should be just expelled. We'll keep expelling without re-educating our people through that particular discipline. They must be disciplined very seriously so that they must not again repeat the same thing. Chair, Honorable Chair, my name is Nelson Diale. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. For his reference, I think it's good to note who asked what question. That's Honorable Diale. Dr. Van Heerden.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Murema came to a certain conclusion with which I really differ. He said that should the DNA be linked to one of the four people in the cell, in a particular cell, then the women must have been with those four people in the cells. But, Chairperson, that's wrong. That incident could have taken, I would like to appear for whoever will be accused for that, because it is quite possible, and I think very possible, that the intercourse maybe that was, okay, let's accept that it was forced penetration in one instance, maybe there was no forced penetration, it was consent in the other case. But the incident could have taken place, that's the issue, before they were locked up. And I think that's something I would not put, you can never put the blame on the police or whoever was in charge of that particular station at that point. Just drawing a conclusion from the fact that should the DNA be positive, the conclusion would be that she was in the same cell as the other four people. I think that's just something. I really think, Chairperson, with respect, this is a very strong point, and one should really pursue this further. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that comment, Honorable Van Heerden. Honorable Nyanda.
May ask, if I may ask, I just want to find out, cell number 8, is it a female cell or a male cell? Female. You note it down. And my second question, I just want to be clarified, I want to know, what is a tomboy? Tomboy.
Thanks, Chair. Tomboy is a...
Oh. If I can get that, because this lady said to the ICDs, the ICD said to us, it was said she is a tomboy, and as he was saying, he was locked up with this other four, because she's a tomboy. If I can get that clarity, I thank you, Chairperson.
That was Honorable Nyanda for his reference, Nyanda. Thank you very much, Honorable Mahote.
Chairperson, firstly, you know, for me it's not that much easy to deal with this issue when the station management is not here, because now we are asking people that got reports.
Mm.
For me, it's not that much helpful. But anyway, the provincial commissioner Mbombo said that they've got program for women and children. I just want to know from her. This woman, because this question is supposed to have been asked to the management of the station, but anyway, I'll ask it. If the cells are supposed to be checked hourly, what made the people that were on duty on that day not to do so? The next question, Chairperson, goes to the ICD. My question to the ICD, how often do they check the cells in that station? Because when there were public hearings in that area, at that very same police station, a child was detained for 48 hours in the cell, and nobody did anything about that. And on the other incident, children were locked up with adults. And this is not what has been reported. This is what members of parliament discovered when they were there. What is the ICD's role in checking the cells? As I think it's one of their mandates in the station.
Thank you very much. That was the Honorable Mahote for his reference. Honorable Mzizi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, it is indeed difficult to ask questions because these are the people who are now giving us the hearsay evidence. They were not there. If it was probably in the instance where it was an oversight visit where we have everybody, people who were in charge at the church office, then we would be asking questions. But nonetheless, there are only two questions, though I know that they would be telling me what they were told. Provincial Commissioner made mention of that this victim, it was noticed that she did not have an underwear. When was this noticed? When she arrived or after being visited at the cell? It would be quite important for us to know whether what happened to the underwear. That's what probably I can ask from her. And also, it is mentioned that it looks as if the docket has been given to so many hands. Now, what was the reason of giving this docket to so many hands? Is it, I know that it started at the church office. Now, when it went to the CID, why there were so many exchanges that the docket is given to this one and again to this one? I would like to know the modus of operandi. Chairperson, then the ICD made mention that this person was detained at 3 o'clock, or 10 past 3 in the morning, and released at 5 o'clock. When she was released, was then sober, or he would not know, but I would like to know probably in the statement that he has whether this person was then sober at that time. He also made mention that at a later stage, she identified one of the suspects. Now, we have learned that there are four suspects. Did she identify these suspects in the presence of the police, at the police cells, or probably she made mention of names of these people, if the statement itself is contained? The other aspect, the ICD made mention that there were statements taken from the police in charge, who were in charge, or the teammate who were at the police station. Now, the question is, when was this statement compiled? Is after the media statement or after this incident was flashed in the media, then the statement was taken, or was it taken immediately after the incident was reported? Because that could be another thing if it was reported after the media coverage. Now, the problem that we have, where hence I say we cannot probably pursue this matter anywhere further. The investigation, because there's a forceful penetration, like my colleague has actually made mention that forceful penetration could have been anywhere, prior to them detention or anyway. That I also agree probably with that. How far is the case now, as of now, because we are now talking, we might be prejudicing the rat's name, the investigation, by probably probing questions right now. It might be sub judice. But we would like to know how far is the investigation and who has the case and what problem is that person encountering. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. That was Honorable Mzizi. Honorable Leru.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, I would like to fully agree with colleague Nelson. I actually absolutely share his sentiment. I think it was disgraceful, and I think that the image of the police was seriously damaged by this incident. What I can't quite understand is that the Commissioner hasn't, as far as I could hear, stated exactly that this victim was in actual fact locked up with four men, because cell number 8 is a lady cell, so I'm not quite sure. I'd like to hear categorically, was she locked up with four men or not?
And then secondly, who locked her into the cell, if we can get clarity on that.
Thank you very much. That was Honorable Leroux. Honorable Ntuli.
Thanks, Chairperson. I want to check here. I've heard that there was an identity parade. I want to find out who were there. Was it the people who were awaiting trialists? I mean, in the, or the police, who was there, I mean, in the identity parade. And I've heard that they were, she could be able to identify those people. And I want to find out, how long does it take for a DNA test to be produced in a normal circumstances? And then, Chairperson, I'm a bit disturbed the way the commissioner and the ICD, they give this presentation. It seems as if the presentation is subjective. If you hear, you can feel that there is a tendency of trying to protect each other. And I want to find out who determines whether the case is supposed to be dealt with by the ICD. Because I'm asking that, why was it the ICD did not continue? Because if he says no, the it was not the police, but we are saying, yeah, it was supposed to be finally at the end. It was supposed to be check whether it was the police, but already the ICD can determine that, no, it's not the police who are the culprits. And if I can find out who reported the case to the ICD, because now I'm asking that to say, if it was reported by the police to the ICD and the ICD decided that no, the police are not at fault, so already they've decided that without finalizing the case. I'll stop there, Chairperson. Thanks.
Thanks very much. That was Honorable Ntuli. Honorable Manyosi.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will ask the question by the Honorable Member Ntuli in a different way. The ICD is saying after investigation it found that the suspect were not the police but members of the public. I did not quite understand members of the public what that means. But surely the case before the ICD was two-pronged. The one part of it was an allegation of a woman inmate being detained with men. That is one thing. It's separate. It is on its own. I want to emphasize this issue that the police were not involved. But the first allegation is that of a woman inmate being placed with men. The second aspect of it is an allegation of rape by four male inmates. That's a separate one on its own. Yes, it is related. Now, on what basis, on what logical basis did the ICD conclude that it was enough to say it is not the police, it is members of the public? Because I assume that members of the public would not have been in a position, allegedly, to place a prison inmate in any place in the cells. So it it is only the police who could do that, not members of the public. But I want an explanation of that. That is the only area I wanted to insist in.
Thank you very much. That was Honorable Manyosi. Honorable West?
Thanks, Chair. Yes, Chair, we had a similar case, you'll recall, also where a female was locked up with males or vice versa. Whatever the merits or the demerits of the case, of course, that is a problem. There's no reason why a female should be locked up with males. And if that had not taken place, then you get the DNA tests, and then the police could quite rightfully say, well, if it does match one of the male prisoners, the DNA, that it must have happened before because they weren't locked up together. If that was excluded, then it could only be a police person visiting the cell, and that could be very easy to resolve. So it complicates the issue. But the basic core is that there should not be an instance where a female is locked up with a male from the outset. Thanks, Chair.
That was Honorable West. Honorable Mukhaliti.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, indeed, I would like to voice also the concern as raised by Honorable Mzizi. It is perhaps unfortunate that we are now sort of discussing this matter while investigation is incomplete. It's unfortunate. But I'm sure you did apply your mind on that. Chairperson, to me it seems the victim, the poor lady, suffered a number of prejudices. And I'm just mentioning a few of them. The commissioner's submission says there were two police vehicles available at the place where she was picked up or immediately thereafter. Why was then not decided there and then that to separate these suspects and whoever these people were drunk so that the female one will travel in a separate vehicle and the other one and the male in the other? Why was the decision taken just to combine the males and the female in one bucket at a time? So that's the first prejudice that is suffered. But then, Chair, you also get some comment that says she is or she was a tomboy. And therefore you can infer that all precautions were thrown overboard. Says, oh, anyway, she'll survive whether we put her with maids because she is anyway a tomboy. So we'll throw her in with the maids. The other one, you should see me here. It's unusual. I'm not a police officer. But, yeah, in my younger life, I was sort of detained many times. You know, prior to detention, I know of a process where you are just free, loosely on your body, looking for sharp instruments and the like. But I don't recall a situation where my underwear was so tough, investigated as well. But then, how did they arrive? How did they, what was it that led them to see that this particular person didn't have an underwear? And what was the reason? Chair, the another prejudice, they say, in terms of the commissioner's presentation, prisons are inspected every 2 hours. Here we see a delay of more than 2 hours without a visit there, and therefore this incident. The last one, Chair, it's not the last one. The ID parades. I would like also to ledge on the question asked by Honorable Nduli.
who lined up for the ID parade? How many people were there? And who were these people? And what precautions were taken before the identification parade was conducted? Chairperson, we heard of here again that the DNA tests were taken 17 days after the fact. Is this unusual? Will it achieve the objective, or it will be just a mere practice that yes, there were DNA tests? Thanks, Chair.
Thanks very much, Chair. That was the Honorable Mukhalipi. Honorable Museki.
Thank you very much. Chairperson, just on a little bit different question. The commissioner said something with regard to the police who made arrest being reservist. She did that. She did mention that, Chairperson. Just to check that if the fact that these police officers themselves did not have sufficient experience also could have contributed to some of the prejudices that my colleague has referred to here, first of all, and secondly, because the allegation that this person was tomboy, that they could have decided that because she looked like a boy, she behaves like a boy, therefore she must be detained with a boy. This, I'm just raising these questions because, you see, we're trying to understand all these things. That's the first part question. The first question, Chairperson. The second one, Chairperson, is to check how far was cell number 8 from the male cells. What was it? What is the distance between these two cells? You will understand why I'm raising that question. I'm trying to determine a number of factors with regard to that question. The other question, Chairperson. The people who have been identified during the ID parade, were these four people in the same cell? Self-explanatory question. Also, I understand you understand why I'm raising that question. ICD, you arrived at the conclusions that my colleagues have referred to. But having arrived at that conclusion, you also say you recommend that the police must take disciplinary action against their members. What informs that? In the light of what you also said, that in your own findings, you are not able to say that this action was actually occurred in the South, it occurred outside. Now, related to that, in your view, this incident or this thing might have happened, in your conclusion you say, it happened outside the cell. This person was arrested, accompanied by a male. What impact is that conclusion that you're having in the company of these two people? What are you actually saying with regard to that? Because I'm actually beginning to think that while I'm sitting, I'm beginning to think that when you say this thing happened in public, you are actually trying to say to us, in your view, this person who was with this lady might be the culprit. It seems that that's where you want to arrive at. It seems that's what you want to. Please help me to understand better what you're saying. If you say this thing was done in public, this person was arrested around 3, released just 5 minutes after 5. Did it happen before the arrest or after the arrest, if it happened in public? Please help us to understand this situation so we are able to help you or help each other to provide a better understanding to the public about this situation. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I can see Honorable Nyanda wants to come in again. That was the Honorable Museki. Ma'am Nyanda.
Thank you, Chairperson. What I want to ask is, they arrested both of them, the male and the female. They locked them separate, or they locked them together. What I want to know, was the man having his underwear, yes or no? Thank you, Chief.
Yeah, that's a bombshell from Amianda. A bombshell or question. I wish I was brave enough to respond to that. Are the members who might have forgotten their last questions, because I don't want to open a second round of questions, even though I'll allow follow-up questions, but I won't allow fresh questions. Let me check if members have got their last question to unload. It's only Honorable Mahote and Honorable Mkalebi and Honorable Museki.
The chairperson, the commissioner said they were phoned. The police were phoned about these people. When they arrived there, were they on the street or in a house? Can they clarify us? When they arrived there, when they picked them up, were they on the street or in a house or in somebody's, this person's house, who phoned them? And also, she mentioned something about the reservist or student. That person, that reservist or student, was he or she supervised by an experienced officer in carrying out his or her duties?
Thanks very much, Chair. Hello, Mkhaliti.
Thanks, Chair. But it's just an, I'm adding on another leg on the question I asked. Chair, in terms of the commissioner's submission, when this victim was picked up, two vehicles were available at that scene. Yet, they did not see it right that they should separate the sexes, the males, this side and the female this side. So they bundled both males and female in one vehicle. Perhaps the other vehicle would continue with the patrol over there. Okay, they did it like that. But suddenly when they arrive at the police station, they now suddenly remember that, oh, we've got to separate those. When they were picking up them there, they didn't realize that male and female is going to be separate. But suddenly when they arrive at the police station, they remember, oh, we must separate them. It's improbable, according to me. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Museki.
Yeah, just the last one, Chairperson, related to some of the questions that we posed earlier. So just, you know, you are dealing with, it was August. You said August, your focus was to deal with questions of race, anything that has to victimize females. That was your priority. I believe also precaution was to ensure that
female children are well protected. Now, I just want to establish from your commission, when this woman, the lady, was released, was she taken home or a place of safety, or was she just released at 5 minutes past 5, and she had to see to itself and find a way out? Just share that with us, please. Thank you.
The last one is Dr. Van Heerden.
I'm just concerned that we are now, investigating the rape. I don't think that's what we should do. I think we should investigate, or rather, the committee should. That's how I see it. Whether she was locked up in a separate cell or not. I know that somewhere along the line the rape comes along, but I'm just concerned that we may be detracted a little bit from what we should do. Namely, whether she was, and I think it's an easy question. The DNA is absolutely essential, and then there is a possibility that she was held up in the same cell, or that's just a possibility. But likewise, she could have been then, the intercourse could have taken place before they were picked up. But I'm just concerned that we are detracted a little bit too much to the rape as such. We are not here with the rape case trial. I think it's the detention that we are busy with. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I deliberately allowed members to ask all these questions so that they don't go for a second round. I'm aware that the questions were so many. You know, but what worries me is that in this police station, the track record in this station is not good. The history of the station in terms of management is not good. That's my worry. Secondly, as Honorable Mahota said, when our colleagues, the National Assembly Portfolio Committee, visited the station, they discovered there so many things that they were not up to scratch. Now, if police reservists and students are going to be given such a serious task to look after, it sends a wrong message to the public out there. Now, the question I'm going to ask to the provincial commissioner, not to the station commissioner, because the investigation is still continuing, and you are still to establish exactly who is to blame here. Those police officers, sorry for the office, because officers is something else in terms of the ranks, but let's call them that for now, just for us to understand. Those police officials or officers who are allegedly involved in this saga, where are they now? Are they suspended, or are they still in their employment? The question is asked by my colleagues here. Now, the provincial commissioner said they arrested this woman with this man. They put them in one bag. That was said on record. Now, ICD. The case is still being investigated, but we have already concluded that the case must go back because, as far as you are concerned, this poor woman was not raped by those inmates there. The possibility that if there is rape, it happened by members of the public, not by the police. The question was asked by two of my colleagues here to say, how did you arrive to that conclusion while waiting for the DNA test?
this puts another dent in the image of the ICD, because ICD, it's a unit that there is a call by many parties to say, well, let's dissolve it, because it's useless. It's so useless because instead of protecting our people and people who are supposed to deserve to be protected, they're colluding, as I've heard now. They're still waiting for DNA test, but they've already concluded to say, no, this rape didn't occur in the cell. Now, the question is, how did they get to that conclusion? Because the DNA test is still out there, as was said by Honorable Leroux. How come? Because it beats me. Now, what is the use of us having a unit that is not helping us rooting out crime in our society? That's the ICD for you. That's why they're in chaos. It's a pity because the management didn't come. Because all those who are here, seated here, they got the report from somewhere. They don't have the first-hand information. Just a pity. Monica, your ICD. Here is your ICD, Monica. That we trust so much. I'm so disappointed. I'm so disappointed. But at the same time, the ICD is telling Parliament that yes, there was proof in terms of what the doctor said, that there was forceful penetration. They are agreeing. Now, how they having agreed that there's forceful penetration, at the same time, but they are concluding that no, that did not happen in a police station. Who determines that? Who has determined that? Hey, Nkosiyam, we're in trouble, man. Maybe let's dissolve this thing. We don't need this ICD. It's useless. Let's get another unit. At some point, I think we will support those who are calling for the disbandment of this ICD thing. We're there, I don't know what I will remember. We're there last week, Thursday. We're there in their head office in Pretoria last Thursday. Things that we raised there with the ICD, some of the things. But let me leave that for another meeting. But it's very disappointing. Now. I think let's allow the provincial commissioner and the station commissioner to respond to these questions and the ICD. But I can tell you that we are not happy with what happened here. If Mr. Morema, Mr. Osaizen, Commissioner Mbombo, let's assume this poor woman was your sister or your daughter. We're going to behave how we're behaving now when we're putting to Parliament. If it was your daughter or your sister, as Parliament, we're going to get the same response we're getting now. Because it seems as if, to you, it's a normal thing that happened. And what worries some of us is that, as it was raised by my colleagues, there's no proper management in that station. The normal visits to cells is not happening, you know. The normal visit, not happening. And the ICD said that they have proof that the police officers there, they flouted, they didn't do what was expected of them. They didn't visit hourly as it is required by their code of conduct and rules. And the ICD is suggesting that some DC actions be taken against those who are in charge in that particular hour. They are proposing the ICD because they are worried. But at the same time, they have concluded that no, it happened somewhere, not there. Commissioner Mbombo responds. Over to you, madam.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, honorable members, for these questions. I just want to say before I respond that really some of the questions, I will respond to all of them, but some of them, unfortunately, I will not be able to share much more light, because if I have to give you the right answers on these questions, then I will have to talk about what is in our docket, Chairperson. And the unfortunate situation is we are in the verge, almost, of finalizing this case. Hence, we cannot be in a position right now to talk about some of the very sensitive statements and information that we have. And I'm really asking the honorable members to understand that point. The first question from honorable member Diale, placing a female detainee with male detainees. It is true, sir. It's inhuman. It is very true, and it's against our legislation as well. And I'm just hoping that at the end of this case, and I'm praying very hard, you wouldn't know that me, as a provincial commissioner of the province, as a woman, in the August months, a woman is traumatized in this fashion. How do I feel? I'm praying every day hard that when this case is finalized, the truth will come out. And I'm hoping that it will not be as bad as we expect in terms of the progress that we are getting from our investigations. The disciplinary actions that you are talking about, obviously, as I have explained, that we are running concurrent investigations, one for discipline and one for criminal alleged rape. We will act when time is right, when we get the evidence that leads to the... But I want to say, sir, you must understand that our disciplinary procedures also are governed by a certain legislation and regulations. So the strong disciplines will be determined by then. Dr. Van Heerden, I agree with what he says, that Chairperson, should the DNA be linked to this four males, we will then be able to understand what then, what other steps to follow. We're all waiting for the DNA, because the DNA is going to give us whether there has been rape. If there has been rape, it's going to tell us who is the suspect. And when we follow the suspect will then be able to tell us where has he raped the woman. So this DNA test is very crucial and important for us to close this investigation, Chairperson. Honorable Nyanda asked, cell 8, is it a female cell or a male cell? It is a female cell, ma'am. What is a tomboy? Ma'am, I am very sorry about this thing of a tomboy. I also don't know myself what a tomboy is. But once again, this is part of the investigation. Because if the investigation proves that there were words of this nature that were uttered, whilst we will be also conducting, finalizing our disciplinary, whoever said this will have to expatiate within the process of the disciplinary. I cannot answer what is a tomboy, but honestly, I don't know what it is. Honorable Ole, I agree with you, sir, that much of the questions that you could have asked when the management was here, especially the people that were directly involved in the process of this investigation, it could have been better for you. But I also want to assure you that when this happened, all of those members, remember when the report came, Chairperson, all of the members that were on duty that time, they were already off. They were all called immediately by Director Fori, and they were all interviewed individually by different people. So statements were taken on the very same time when this thing was reported. But you also asked about the fact that why are we not checking the cells in terms of Standing Order 205 hourly? I want to say, sir, this according to the report that I got, a superintendent, because all our release at the station, they are supervised by a superintendent. The superintendent reported to us that he did check, but it is unfortunate, it is very much unfortunate, that according to our registers, he did not endorse that he did actually hourly inspected the cells. So that is an omission. I also want to report, Chairperson, to say that is one area in this particular matter which is critical for us, and we are dealing with that. The ICD will respond to that other question. Honorable Mzizi, he asked, when was it noticed that the victim did not have underwear? According to the statements that we have, the female constable that is working at the cell with an inspector, when we detain people, we put them in a holding cell, which is just next to the office of the members that are working there at the cell. And according to the statement, she searched the victim immediately that time when she was at the holding cell, because we are not allowed to take prisoners to the big cells before you have searched them so that you can take their important valuables. So at that time when she was at the holding cell, before detained in cell 8, she was then searched. Why the docket is changing hands? The docket was given to the ICD. Simple because any action that happens, Chairperson, in our environment where there is a suspicion or a benefit of doubt in terms of action by the police, we ask the ICD to continue with that investigation to differentiate the behavior of the police around that particular incident. Hence, we send the docket to the ICD. But because this was rape, we asked initially our FCS member, which is Female Inspector Ross, to do an investigation whilst we are waiting for the ICD to take over the docket. Remember as well that even if the ICD could have taken the docket to do an investigation, we still had a responsibility as police officials to deal with that particular incident to ensure that there is proper counseling, there is proper support to the victim, and all of those. Hence, Inspector Ross was actually tasked with this. Unfortunately, then, when it came back, she had to take over again with the investigation. Then the ICD will also respond to that other question, sir. The statements were taken in the morning of the 24th, after the incident was reported. The case docket, the case was postponed to the 11th of November. I think it's the 11th of November, whilst we were waiting for the DNA test results, which we are hoping by that time we'll have the results already. Honorable Leroux said this is disgraceful, which is true, sir. And it has tarnished our image so much, but we are still hoping. I want to assure the person that let us, whilst we are grieving around this matter, let us also, whilst we are seeing that this matter has drawn the name and the image of SAPS into disrepute, but also understand that the investigation is still underway and has not proven who is guilty in these parties. Let us hope and wait until the investigation is finalized. He asked, was the victim locked up in cell with men? That, sir, unfortunately, I can answer and say, cell 8, where statements say this woman was locked in, is a female cell. The investigation will then prove whether really the victim was locked up with men. Honorable Ntuli said, the identification parade, who was in the identification parade? I am going, sir, to ask the station commissioner to respond because he was there himself in the identification parade. Can you answer, Derek?
Chairperson, yes. On the parade, was suspect was in the cells, in the Kimberley cells itself. They were putting on the parade. And then the complainant was bringing by an investigative officer to do the pointing out.
So come again?
The parade was held in the cells. The suspect in the cells, they were part of the parade. On the parade. And I think one or two guys from outside, you could get it that morning to put on the parade with them. And then they bring in the complainant and they point them out.
Who did she point out?
The four suspects that we alluded to here.
She pointed at the suspects.
Four suspects were in the cell.
She pointed at them. How many people were there in that parade besides the four inmates?
There were nine.
There were nine. But you were able to identify the four who were in the one cell.
According to her, yes.
Nako.
Yes, sir.
Nako.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, also to add on that, there were nine people on the identification parade, as the station commissioner says. But out of the nine people, there were seven people that were detained during that night. And we added two people to make nine. And so that we can make sure that she knows who raped her, or she can at least try to identify. So she did identify four people out of the nine people that were there, and four of those people that she identified were arrested during that night. There were nine people in the identification parade. Seven of the nine people were arrested during that night when she was also detained, were detained there. Two people that were part of the identification parade were not people that were detained during that night. She did identify four people, and amongst the four people that she identified, all of them were people that were also detained during that night, meaning they are amongst the seven. Yes. Yes, Chairperson, let's put it that way. Yes.
Chairperson, the other one was a next door neighbor. It's what you
yes.
said before.
Yes. The next question was about how long the DNA takes to be produced in a normal situation. Once again, Chairperson, I'm not going to be able to answer this question because the DNA, I don't have an experience, that's number one, on understanding how it's happening. But secondly, we have got a lot of information that sometimes we need. It depends on what type of a case that you send, and also it depends on what type of semen you send for that investigation. But we are able to ask for prioritization of sensitive case like we did in this particular one. I think the ICT, the fact that we are protecting each other, I just want to say to a person, I can agree that we have got a relationship with the ICD in the province, but in this particular case, ourselves, we wanted them to take on it, to take over it, because we knew that it will come to this stage where police are being pointed as being blamed or for whatever reason on this matter. So whenever there is an issue where the police are involved, we always like them to take charge of that so that we are out of it. Honorable Manyosi says there was an inmate in men's cell, which is a separate thing, and there is also allegation of rape by four males, which is also a separate thing, which is also very true. that is one other thing which I'm not going to get deep into this in responding to it, because it's part of the investigation. The investigation that we are dealing with is to determine whether the victim was in any case detained in the male cell, and the other investigation which we are busy with is to determine whether she was raped. So ourselves as well, we are investigating, looking at all these angles. Honorable West indicates that at no stage that we can have female members locked up with male prisoners, which is true, and it's very unfortunate if it did happen. Honorable Mkhaliphi says the victim suffered so much prejudices. The one first question, honorable member, which says we included the victim and the male prisoner into one bag. Let me again, Tatesin, explain. And I think it was on record earlier when I did my first presentation to say the two police members arrested these two, a victim and a male suspect. And they took the victim in front and they took the male suspect at the back of the baggie. In the same process, they met another baki which was having three male suspects. And they transferred the male suspect to this baki, which has got three male suspects, to make four. And they took the lady at the back of their baki, because in our bakis, we carry two, that is the driver and the crew member. Now, once they had this victim in front, they were three, and obviously they were not comfortable sitting. That's why they called this other party to take the male suspect and continue to the police station. That's what I said, Chairperson, earlier. I think Honorable Member did not understand what I was trying to say, but I did mention that.
Well, I feel that maybe when they were seated with her in front, while they were not comfortable, is there a time where they discovered she's not wearing a panty?
Per person, I wouldn't know at this stage, because her statement says only when she searched her. It could be possible because she was wearing a mini skirt, per person, and a top, but it's only, according to us, only when she was searched.
Well, she said I suspect she was sitting in between those two police officers.
It could be, Chairperson.
And Nako, yeah. I think it's clear. So those officers, is it males or females? Those were...
It was a female reservist and a constable.
Okay. Kubeka Ntombi.
The second question was exactly about the fact that how did they arrive at the fact that she doesn't have an underwear. Now, it was during the time when they were searching her. Wearing a miniskirt, and you, when you search a person, you touch. I don't know. I couldn't be in detail how they picked it up, but in a miniskirt and searching, maybe. But they did. She did found that she does not have an underwear.
Member says, I said if there are follow-up questions, I will allow them. The first, I won't allow fresh questions, but follow-up questions, I will allow them. If you think there's some other thing that has to be clarified further.
The other question was about the hourly visits, which the honorable member was asking, why 2 hours late now, which I already alluded to it, that it's very much unfortunate, and obviously we are working on that, Chairperson. We are dealing with that matter. Because our rule and our procedure is that we have got hourly visits at stations. And then the other question was who lined up for the identification parade, which we already alluded to it, sir. The other question was what precautions were taken during the identification parade. Chairperson, when we are conducting identification parade, we have got an identification parade room. The suspect herself could not even be allowed to see eye to eye as I see you. they are beyond a glass, and she is that side. And she always have, together with the investigating officer, sometimes a counselor or a social worker and the management and all. So there is no intimidation when she must point out, because ourselves as well, Chairperson, as much as we could be seen as maybe having to protect the police around this matter, but I want to sensitize members of Parliament, Chairperson, that we are also interested to prove a case. Because we have got a case that has been registered. We have got a responsibility in terms of our mandate to make sure that we bring the suspect to court at the end of the day. But also to make sure that we clean our department in terms of making sure that we are a clean and an effective organization. So obviously we are dealing with this matter with the utmost urgency and utmost best that we could afford to. It's unfortunate that some of these things might have happened. The DNA tests were taken 17 days after the incident. That is another concern from the Honourable Member. Once again, there has been a problem around the DNA because the next day, on a Monday, we took the four suspects to court, and the case was then postponed. Now, before we send the DNA test of the victim, we also needed to find the samples from the four suspects. And now the four suspects, when they were released by the court, they were all over the show. It was difficult to get hold of them. There was one whom we take time to collect so that we can get the samples of the DNA. And that is one of the delays which has actually caused. But generally, we were supposed to have acted immediately and sent these things. And I think somehow there was that. Honorable Mkhalipi raises a very important issue about sufficient experience within the members that are patrolling. Because, Chairperson, I agree with Honorable Member that sometimes it could have caused problems. That if we've got people that are patrolling and they don't have enough experience, that sometimes these things like this will happen and they will not have an immediate supervision. But the reservist constable who was in the baki was with a constable, not a student constable. Now, a constable has already graduated from a student constable. Yes, he still doesn't have much experience, but at least the basic experience of patrolling and of effecting an arrest and of understanding how to deal with the victim and all that, he knows. He understands. Even the reservist female constable, before we take them out on patrols and on whatever, we first train them on the basics. We understand they may still make certain human mistakes, but that is the reason why we always make sure that there is a trained police officer with them. But it could be possible, sir, it's very true what you are saying about the experience, because you can never detect exactly how this person has now gained the desired experience that could really display the image that we want. The tomboy thing, let me just say even to the Honourable Member, this woman did not even look like a tomboy. I don't know if this was said, how would it been said? Because firstly, she was on a skirt and a top. So she is a woman by virtue of her clothing. But also, even if you look at her, she's not looking funny. Let me put it that way, Chairperson. This tomboy thing, I don't think it's the right thing to be said to her, because she's not like, you can't doubt that she's a woman. Alpha Cell 8 is, our cells are in a block, Chairperson, and all male suspects that were detained there, they were detained on cell 1, on cell 2, and on cell 5. Yes. And this cell 8 had females. So obviously there was like some few doors in between, but all our cells are also in a block like this. So it's not very close, but it's also not very far.
Was the question asked, so in that cell,
Was she alone as a female detainee, or were there other female detainees in that particular?
It was not asked, sir, but I can respond to that. She was detained with three other females on cell 8. There was a concern that identified people were in the same cell. Director? Identified people were in the same cell. We are going to say the identified people were in cell 1. Now, we will conclude maybe by saying we are not at this stage want to divulge more information around this, because that is also a bone of contention. So let us just say,
of the four, Commissioner, of the four suspects identified by the alleged victim, was the person who was arrested, or the victim, also one of the four?
I take it then, Commissioner, that you also took the statements from the other three ladies in yeah, that's all. Thank you.
He was, Honourable Member, he was one of the four. We took statements from people that claim to have stayed with this woman in a tavern before she was even arrested. We took statements from people that she was released with, and all of those people. So we have got statements all around. Honourable Mstaker is recommend disciplinary steps. Okay, that is the ICD to respond on that. Honourable Nyanda, Chairperson, he asked, If the man was having his underwear, all prisoners, Chairperson, all people that are detained are checked, are inspected. All men were searched by Inspector Ditsebe, who doesn't claim that he found any man without an underwear. So we presume or assume that all men had their own underwears. Honourable Museki says, where did we find these two people? On the street, in the house? Say they were in the street. They were found in the street. The people that phoned the Baki is our CCTV camera people, operators. Because when they operate the camera, they see who is staggering in the street and who is what, and then they phone the buggy on patrol and say, please check if those people are safe. And if they are not safe, if they are drunk or whatever, bring them, because otherwise something can happen. So they were on the street when they were picked up, because this buggy was patrolling in the rank area.
I just want to find out, amongst the four suspects, that man who was arrested with this woman, is he not part of the suspect?
And Chairperson, can I ask that we don't deal with that one, these nitty gritties too much. I don't know if the media is here, but we sometimes find problems when we deal with cases like this, because now if what we sometimes talk about here, it comes out, then, you know, our case is in jeopardy. I'm requesting, sir.
Relax, madam. You are in parliament now.
Thank you.
Whatever you said is protected.
Thank
nobody
you
can use
much.
It against you or even a court. And take it, madam. Continue.
The other question from Honorable Mseki says, when she was released, was she taken to a place of safety and so on? How was she released? When she was released, a person with 17 other people. It's also unfortunate, once again, because we did not take her to any place of safety or anything, because at that time she was sober, she knew who herself is and where she's going and so on. So she never reported. According to the report I got, they were all asked, are you ready to go? They also said, no, we are fine, we're going. So there was no other follow-up.
Maybe while you are still there, can't say, when did she report that she was molested?
Quarter past 8, we then received a phone call.
Same day when she was released?
Same day, from hospital.
And she was sober now?
She was released after 5, Chairperson, in the morning. After 5 in the morning, and she left. Quarter past 8, the same day, the police received a phone call from the hospital saying, I've got a woman here who claims that she has been raped from your police station in the cell. Please come and attend to it. So seemingly, according to Mr. Morema, if you listen to Mr. Morema, says she, when she was released, she told a man that was also part of her group that was released to say, I've been raped. And then this man said, let's go to the hospital. So they went to the hospital. They then reported the rape in the hospital to a nurse. And then the nurse said, no, I can't help you. Let me phone the police, because for me to help you, because she wanted to be checked and be given the tablets or whatever, for whatever. And then she said, I can't do that. If you want me to help you with this particular help, then you must have a case number and the police must bring you. Then she phoned the police and the police came. The police, when they came, they said, okay, if you're reporting rape, let's open a docket and let's take you through the forensic examination and all that. And your, yes.
Oh, so she reported immediately when she was released to this man to say, no, I was raped.
To this man who was going with her.
So she did that immediately. Oh, no, that's good.
We don't know when, but she reported to this man.
Immediately, same day, yeah.
We hopefully immediately, same day, it was same day.
Yeah, because between 5 and 8, you can
it's
see
the
that.
Same, yes.
Yeah, that was immediate. Thank you very much. Continue.
Chairperson, you also asked, you are concerned about the history of the police station at Transvaal Road in terms of its management. I've taken note of that, sir. And also you are saying, if we are going to give reservists and students such a task, it becomes a problem in order to make sure that our people are being served properly. We have taken note of that, but we always make sure that these people are working under a supervision, because that's how our legislation demands of us. But we are also taking note, and I think the station commissioner is taking note, and make sure that in the future, we make sure that these things don't happen. But I think from these incidents, Chairperson, every day we learn on our mistakes. As much as it is wrong to learn from the mistakes that are actually on affecting other individuals. Those police officials, you ask, where are they? They are still in Transvaal Road, say. They are still working, because our processes says ourselves we must be able to prove a prima facie against individuals for us to take steps. That's why I'm saying, if the DNA test comes out today, tomorrow, our investigation, our disciplinary investigation, is only left with one statement for us to finalize it, and then the DNA test results, and then we act against the members if there is anything that proves that they were negligent. And, Chairperson, I want to also say it very clear here, that those members, they know it very clear, and I explained it to them, because I also had a meeting with them after this incident. I explained to them that if it is found at the end of the investigation that they are liable, it will not only end up being a disciplinary process, it will also be a criminal process, because remember, they will have defeated the ends of justice if this is proved beyond a reasonable doubt. So they are aware of what is possible to happen should we complete the investigation.
So you're investigating them while they're still at the same place, where the incident took place?
Yes, Chairperson.
Oh, my word.
You also said the victim was arrested with men, and it's in record. I tried to explain earlier, Chairperson, because it was also the concern of the honourable member. They were arrested, yes, she was arrested with a man, but she was never, according to the reports that I have, according to the statements that I have, she was never put in the buggy with a man. That is what, according to the reports that we have. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Yeah, can we hear Director van der Westhuizen?
Chairperson, yes. The question, as you say, if the people are still working, they are not suspended, they are not suspended. The Commission has alluded to that. We're just waiting for the finalization of the departmental case, and as well as the results of the DNA, so we can draw up the conclusion, and from there we will act. Thank you, Chairperson.
Aye, subs. These people are investigating them, Director Van Westhuizen. Why are they in the same place? This is very fun. But anyway, we'll come to that in our conclusion. Mr. Morema.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. I'll go through the questions as they were raised. I'll start with the question of Honorable Diale, who made a comment that placing males and females together is inhuman. Yes, we do agree, and we treat this matter in the most serious light. That was our approach we exercised during our investigation. Honorable Dr. Van Heerden, who stated that I mentioned that I made a conclusion that if the DNA results are positive, then the police must be charged. From the report I compared to the police commissioner, I'm sure has a copy. There is no way where I made conclusions, because even the police themselves at this stage, they cannot tell whether the victim was raped in the cells or not. So whatever I used the word presumed. I also mentioned that should it happen that the DNA test is negative, then it may be presumed that the victim was lying. So I use the word presume. Even when I recommended to the police, I use the word the police should consider taking disciplinary action against their members. Even the doctor himself, who examined the victim, he did suggest that there was forceful penetration. He also didn't make a conclusion. So I hope you understand, Chair. I'm also not in a position as the ICT to make conclusions, because even the medical doctor in this case could not make conclusions. He only suggested there was a forceful penetration. We do have a copy of that medical report.
The doctor examined the victim and came up with a report to say, yes, there was forceful penetration. Why are you saying this makes a conclusion?
I have a quote of the report. He said, suggestive of forceful penetration. He suggests that there is forceful penetration. It's a suggestion.
Now, we'll come to that. You know, this okay. ICD, man. We'll continue, but before you ruffle feathers, okay. Let's continue.
The question asked by Honorable Mahote is, if the cells are to be checked early, were they not visited? Why were they not visited? I think the police have mentioned that. They acknowledged that that was not done, and standing order 361 was not adhered to, and I'm sure we recommended the police should consider taking disciplinary action against their members. So we'll continue to monitor the case, and then they will give us feedback as to who did they take action against. Yeah, that we'll monitor. The other question was asked by Honorable Mahote as to how often do we visit the cells. We are having a vast province. Geographically speaking, we are having the biggest province in the country, but we always try our most best to do at least 30 station visits and cell visits in a quarter. In July, we conducted 14 cell visits at various police stations across the province. In August, we conducted 15 cell inspections, and in September, we conducted 5. So we always try and conduct cell inspections and DVA audits every month and on a quarterly basis. That is our role in terms of cell visits. And then the question from Honorable Mzizi was that why was the docket exchanged between so many hands? After we received the docket on the day of the incident, which was 24 of August, we conducted a preliminary investigation. And when we look at the evidence available, including the statement from the victim, she stated that one of the rapists was the person who stayed opposite her, as well as inmates. Now, we then referred the docket back to the police, and they did ID parade on the 25th of August, a day after the incident. Now, immediately after the ID parade was conducted, those people were charged. Because as the ICG, we have only a mandate in terms of members of the SAPS. We could not charge those persons because they were civilians. And as a result, we could not do a separate investigation as to whether the woman was detained with males or not. Because if we take separate statements, the police take other statements and they contradict one another. That will give the police a problem during the disciplinary hearing and even during the trial. So we therefore left the docket with the police to continue the investigation. However, we continue to monitor. To show that we are definitely monitoring, one of the things I recommended in my report was that there was a woman mentioned as Mpo by the victim. When we looked at the docket for the last time, we discovered that the statement of that person who was with the victim on the night of the incident before she was detained, her statement was not yet taken. So we therefore indicated that the police should take the statement of that woman. And we are definitely sure they are going to do it because we are going to monitor and make sure they do it. It was also mentioned that was the complainant sober when she was released, or the victim? I think the commissioner has already answered on that. Where did she identify the suspect? The director already mentioned. And when did the police start taking statements? Is it after the media coverage or immediately? From the docket that we received on the same day of the statement of the incident, there were already statements taken by the police, so it clearly indicates that they commenced with the investigation immediately. The other question from Honorable Leroux was that, was she locked up with males or not? Who locked her up? If I could...
Madam Rama, can you concentrate on question directed to the ICD? Okay. Those are the ones dealt with by the
people
concerned. Yeah.
Yeah. I've noted that. Yeah. Yeah, the Honorable Julie mentioned that it seems the ICD and the police are protecting one another. We are an independent body, and whenever we notice the wrongdoing on the part of the SAPS, we recommend, as we did in the case of cell inspection, there we said they flouted the procedure and they should take an action against their members. However, it's also within our responsibility where the police are right to come out and say the police are right, so that we are not a witch hunt against the police. So we are always being fair with them due to our independence also, yeah, and the mandate in terms of which we discharge. The other question raised by Honorable Manyose was that ICD found that suspects were not suspect, and on what basis did ICD conclude? The statement finished by the complainant and the subsequent ID parade, which was conducted by the police, made us to suggest that this docket is not within our mandate, so we'll therefore return it to the police. So the police therefore had to continue the raid. And the issue of whether she was detained with males or females, those two issues cannot be separated. Because if we were to separate them, we're going to prejudice the entire investigation process, because we will take our own separate statement. In a normal course of investigation, when we investigate a criminal case where the police are involved, when we want the police to take disciplinary action, we take statements, we give them the statements. Because if they take their own statements, it will be a contradiction. So in this case, because they're investigating the main charge, let them continue. We'll therefore continue to monitor ourselves. the question raised by Honorable Moseki was that we made a conclusion about what the police have done and have not done. I want to confirm that we didn't make conclusion yet. We recommended to the police. So whether they take an action or not, they must tell us as to what action did they take. So every time we make a recommendation, we continue to monitor whether they're implemented or not. And if they are not able to implement them, they should always indicate reasons thereof. Yeah, the issue of arrest also raised by Honorable Moseki. I want to confirm that according to the records, the arrest happened at 3:10 a.m. on the 24th of August. And then she was released at 5:05. However, it was mentioned that she was under the influence of strong drink. So I wouldn't know whether she was sober or not. I think the police have answered on that. But the issue was mentioned that she was under strong drink by the police. So I wouldn't know, yeah. And Honorable... Okay, Nyanda, okay, this question was already answered. Yeah, the issue again raised by Honorable Mahote was that police alleged that they were phoned, who phoned them, and where were those people. The victim, after she was released, she met another detainee who was also released almost the same time outside. And then she then explained to this male person, I was raped, and then the male person suggested, let's go to the hospital. And after, upon arrival at the hospital, that's when the nurse called the police and said, I'm having a person here who was allegedly raped. Then the police assisted in opening a rape case immediately and conducting ID parade, charging suspect. That I commend the police, definitely. They did their job correctly there by assisting the victim to complain a case there. I commend them. The other concern raised by the question is that the case is still going on, but ICD returned the docket. We were going to have a problem in terms of the legislation that governed our establishment if we had to charge the suspect and do the ID parade. So that was the reason why we had to return the case docket to the police. And from our recommendation that we made, we didn't make any conclusive, because this case, some facts, we need to prove them more beyond a reasonable doubt, of which even the police at this stage, they're not able to prove beyond reasonable doubt. The other thing I want to add is that statements were taken from those female officials who were with the victim, Monica Banyame. According to them, the victim was detained with them. So those are some of the things we observed. So that's why, from our side and the police, we are not in a position at this stage to say that whether she was with males or not. I'm sure the outcome of DNA will give further direction in this regard as to who should be held liable. I hope I answered all the questions, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I hope we didn't open a can of worms. Can we get follow-up? Let's start from here and go that way.
No, thanks, Chairperson. Before I do the follow-up, I just wanted to say that I hope the commissioner, because we were with her in that visit, just to check whether she remembered that when we visited there, we find that there was a minor and there was an ICD person in the police station, but who was not aware that there was a minor who has not been consulted by the probation office. Because that was the other thing which we found when we arrived at the station. There was a minor, and the minor was not, he was there after 24 hours, and there was an ICD person in the police station, and she was not aware that there was a minor in the cell. But I'm moving forward. I want to find out, they said 17 people were released with the victim.
Why were they released? It means all these 17 were drunk. Then they were released in the morning. I mean, who determined this person is drunk now, now he's sober? He or she can be released. If you look at this, big, big chunk, 17 people in prison, all drunk, and then in the morning at 5, they are all sober, then they are released at the same time. And then we don't know whether these 17 are all females or it's a mix. And they are released at 5, and I think at that time it's still dark at 5. If we can find out the logic in this, the whole setup, you just collect the people at night to the cell, and then at 5 you release them. They are, I'm not sure whether you, what are you saying? They were arrested because they were drunk, and then at 5 you determine that now they are sober. What is the process here? It's very questionable. So many people. Or you just find them in one place and but maybe we need some clarity. How do you operate in the station? At night you look for drunkards and then towards the morning you release all of them. Thanks.
No, that is Transvaal Road for you. Transvaal Road Police Station for you. That's how they operate.
Chairperson. Commissioner Mbombo, the name is M-A-H-O-T-E, and it's pronounced Mahote. Secondly, Chairperson, you see, I pity the commissioner really. Here we are seeing the reflection of that station, even those that have never visited it. We've got the station commissioner here, he responded to two questions. And those two questions, one had to be clarified again by the commissioner. The other one, we still have questions. I don't want to go back to the ICD because we may not leave this room. All of the questions, all of the answers that he gave have follow-ups, serious follow-ups. I just want to know from the commissioner, Chairperson, she mentioned that the superintendent did not record or sign the round of the cell. What is happening about him or her? We don't know if it's a him or a her. And also, Chairperson, my worry is about the DNA test of the suspect. I don't know if I heard her correctly when she said they only got hold of one. The rest is around. Can we get a clarity on that one? The issue of the tomboy, I was going to come back to it because she said she does not know what a tomboy is. But later she explained. She explained the tomboy. I mean, the way she explained that this woman was not a tomboy, for me it gave the impression that she understands what a tomboy is. So I understand now what a tomboy is. I just want to know from the commissioner, does she really think that she's got capable management in that station that can run the station the way they're supposed to run? Because for me, if it was not for management of that station, we would not have been asking so many questions to her now. Is she sure of that management? Is she comfortable? Lastly, Chairperson, this ICT gentleman said, this woman said she screamed when this thing happened on his initial input. She screamed. How far is this cell from the CFC that people cannot hear a person screaming from that cell? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, as I said, that we probably might prejudice the case if we keep on asking questions, but we are not investigating the matter. We only seek clarity, and I think the people before us should not understand that we are not grilling them. But it is the statement that you are making that make us to dig more to get information. I'll leave the question that I was going to pursue, because out of the blue, a panty was brought into the picture. Now, wherever she goes, one would always want to know, what happened to the panty? Why was it kept here? What happened at the hospital? Up until now, do we know where the panty is? As far as I'm concerned, that issue, I think the court will pursue. Let me not pursue it, but that worries me. I don't want anybody to pursue, actually to respond to that. Chairperson, my fellow brother there, IECT, your statement, your statement, sir, I don't know whether have you been to court, and I'm sure you must have been. You are now making a statement now saying that the doctor presumed that there was a penetration. A man of that caliber, and it's in his or her integrity, cannot go to court with a presumption. And if that is indeed what you are saying, it seems as if you must have probably discussed the issue with the doctor when you were doing this. But the other thing that I want to conclude with, you are now, the statement earlier said the female inmates statement were taken, and they all confirmed that they were with her. You come up now, you say Mpo's statement was discovered at a later stage that she made mention of Mpo, and I don't know when the Mpo's statement has been taken or is going to be taken. Those are some of the things that really leave us in the alleged. I don't know where are we up to. Please, make us not to start actually questioning you. Give us just the facts so that we can determine the case. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, I've noticed you, Doc. I think there are many questions here and answers. I'll suggest something immediately after the doctor had spoken. I think the other modalities and logistics, let's leave them aside for the courts and concentrate on some of the maladministration that took place in handling this case. And the question of the type of management we're having in that station, I think those are the questions as Parliament we're going to pursue. Yeah, but let me listen to the doctor and then we'll summarize.
Chairperson, really, I think we are now getting into, and we are making it very difficult we are now investigating the raping. That's not the issue, Chairperson. I cautioned us earlier, and quite correctly, the Commissioner indicated that we are really, answers that is being drawn out now here can jeopardize this case, and I really want to caution about this, Chairperson. I'm not going to sit here and discuss where is the panty, what happened here, and what happened there. Really, Chairperson, we are not here to discuss that. We are here to discuss and investigate whether the lady was incarcerated in the same cell or not. And we are really getting now out of hand, and I'm not going to sit here, Chairperson, discussing this and that. And we must respect what the Commissioner indicated here. I find it amazing that my colleague Mzisi, who had a lot of court experience, is now indulging in questions like this. Really, Chairperson, I must object.
Now, thanks, Doctor. But I think we're not going to dictate the line of questioning to members. I think what we're going to do is to make sure that we don't pronounce ourselves as to exactly. But members can question whatever, but I think the commissioner, as you rightly said, she has said some questions. She will try to avoid them. And she did that, some questions. She did that nicely, attacking them. Those that are a bit penetrative, that they might end up being used during the court process. Can I give the commissioner 3 minutes to respond to the questions? I know the session commissioner will just agree with what the commissioner has said, and check with the ICD if. I don't think there's anything to respond to. I think we'll make our own pronouncements at the end. Provincial Commissioner.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, Honorable Julie is concerned about the 17 people that were released together with the victim. Whether it was all people that were arrested for drunkenness, and who determines who is drunk, and what process do we follow? In Kimberley, Chairperson, especially where our station Transvaal Road is situated, there is taverns in the same street and in a very close proximity of the station. And one of these taverns is actually a problematic tavern. And in the CBD of Kimberley as well, there are other taverns that are there, which is then posing a very serious life threat to many of those people that go to taverns, even sometimes those people that don't even have been in the tavern but are walking on the street. Many a times we find people in the morning dead in the streets. It has happened in front of the taverns, in front of the station itself, in front of the court, everywhere. So after we analyze our cases of rape, murder in the CBD area, we then decided that it's important that we save the lives of our people, because that's our responsibility. Hence, when people are drunk, are found drunk beyond their control of that they can be able to take themselves home or to a place of safety, we then ask the police that are on patrols to take them to the police station. It is so unfortunate, Chairperson, that in the police station we do not have a place of safety where we can keep them such that they sober. And then in the morning, when they become normal in their minds, we release them to go wherever they were going. Unfortunately, once again, Honorable Member Chairperson, I want to say it is also unfortunate that on the basis of the experience that we spoke about earlier, we might not be in a position right now to indicate to what level of drunkenness these people that were arrested could have been at that time. But what I know of, what I've been told of, what the report says and statement says, the victim that we are talking about was in a very highly extensive level of drunkenness. And that is what we are doing. We are trying to save them from danger. We are trying to save them from rape, those that are women. It is unfortunate if this woman was raped in the cells, because we believe and we are hoping that many of them, we have saved them by putting them in those cells for a time to sober and leave them out to go home. Honorable Member Mahote, I'm very sorry, Honorable Member, about this, to always keeping on pronouncing this wrong. The issue of the hourly visits, when you visit a cell, you come back and you make an entry to the OB register that is in the cells, that you have visited cell 1, 2, 3, and cell 1 has got so many inmates, cell 2 has got this, cell 3, and at cell 1, one inmate complained about this and this, all that information, because the purpose of the visit is meant to make sure that the people that we put in the cells are still safe. And especially these people that we detain for drunkenness, because remember, sometimes they get into the cell and they fight. So hourly visits are meant to make sure they are either sleeping or they are okay, they are talking, they are fine. They are not fights, or one of them, sometimes they get into the cell and they sleep and sometimes they vomit and they drown. There's a lot of things that happen with people that are in the cells, especially those that are drunk. Hence the hourly visit. But whenever you have done that, you must make an OB entry. Hence we are saying, in this particular instance, the next visit after the arrest of the victim appears on our registers as having been done at 5 o'clock, just before their release. So we are saying at 4 o'clock there could have been a visit which we don't see, despite the fact that the officer in charge claims that he has done a visit. He endorsed it on his diary, but we are not taking that as a yes because our records don't say that. So we are working on him on in terms of that. We are dealing with that chairperson. The issue of the management as well as the tomboy thing, or chairperson, I simply don't know the tomboy, honestly, but I was just explaining whatever the tomboy is, this woman was not looking like whatever they assigned to a tomboy. That's what I was trying to explain. But the issue of the management being capable or incapable, we have got processes in the police to determine management abilities. We have got a performance enhancement program that we are also engaging ourselves to determine management abilities. Honestly, I want to say this is a very difficult question for me to respond. Maybe, Chairperson, if I'm allowed, I can respond to this at a later stage, maybe on a person-to-person discussion. Because I think that people do make mistakes. All of us, we do make mistakes, but we still accept the fact that we can be given an opportunity to correct and rectify our mistakes whenever there's an opportunity like that. So hopefully I will be able to respond on a one-to-one about this matter. How far is the cell from the CSC such that this woman could not be heard? Chairperson, our cells are at the back of our CSC, but despite the CSC, there is also a small cell CSC, remember, where there's these officers who searched the victim. So obviously, if there was a scream in the cells, those police officials that are manning the CSC at the back, the cell CSC, could have heard, but also other inmates in other cells could have heard the scream, which is subject of investigation as well. Chairperson, the question which says what happened with the painting, let me leave that one. Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, the doctor has protected today. He says he's prepared to go and defend whoever was involved in this case. I wish I was going to appear on behalf of the victim. I would not be Dr. Down. What we're going to do, thanks very much, Provincial Commissioner and the Station Commissioner for responding to the questions raised by members and even for clarifying some of the issues that were raised in this meeting. And even for the assurances that you made that you will make sure that some of the mistakes that were committed by the police in that station are followed up. I agree with you that to err is human. We can't claim all of us to be perfect here, but at some point you'll fumble somewhere. But what I want to convey to you, Provincial Commissioner, is that we want to aid you to go and deal with the management of that station. I want to personally ask you to go to that station and deal with some of the challenges there, because if you can check the report of the Potolo committee when they visit that station, you understand why I'm saying go and deal with some of the management challenges in that station. And I want to request, again, not request, but ask you to also go and review the decision you took about the affected officials in that station. Because we're dealing with five departments in this cluster. It is this one, certain security, correctional services, justice, defense, and intelligence, as this cluster. And in many of these departments, when there are officials who flouted on the rules or procedures to be followed on a particular case, some action are taken against those officials, but surprisingly, in your case, it's pleasure-free. I can give an example of this committee when we discovered in correctional services that the officials were involved in one or two things that are unbecoming. The department don't waste, they'll take action immediately. Because I can tell you now, whatever you're investigating, as well as those people are in that police station, the investigation will be, I don't think that it will be fair, but I'm leaving that to you. Go and review and look into what we're raising here as this committee. And we'll request to get a report back as to the action we have taken or corrective measures that we are going to put in place. Report to us before the end of this month. My office will communicate to you about the exact date when are you expected to come and give us a feedback as to how far are we as far as this the management of that station is concerned. The case is something else because the courts will deal with it. We can't dictate when it's going to be finalized. And the concern you raised about the delay, about the DNA test, we agree with you. We raise this as a committee as well in many meetings. Now, to the ICD, the only thing I can say is that Chief, go and put your house in order. Go and put your house in order. Make it easy for us to defend and justify your existence as ICT. Make it easy for this collective to defend when Darren West will propose that you be disbanded because you are a toothless body. Because if you don't convince us, I'm telling you now, there are many political parties who are saying, what is the use because of some of these shambles we're seeing in the ICT? That's all I can say to the ICT. I think I'm going to save my energy and breath about ICT and just stop just here. But thanks very much, Provincial Commissioner, for coming. And we expect to get some regular feedbacks. Our lines are always open, and our contact details, I know you'll always have them if you want them, so that we keep contact and know what's happening. But I can tell you that that case, really, we're not going to raise some of us until it's reached its finality. We see that the justice must be done. Regardless of whether that woman, she was drunk, or she looks like a man, or she's a tomboy, whatever, her rights were violated. Regardless of how she looks, or the condition in which she was, if she was drunk, it was good to take care so that she is safe. But unfortunately, instead of her being safe, she went under some horrendous experiences in the hands of people who were supposed to protect her. Where to say that? And we're not going to be apologetic about that. She deserves to be protected, no matter what. Having said that, well, let's thank you, madam, and the station commissioner and the ICD people. Until we meet again before the end of this month, maybe before we excuse them, I see a hand from Honorable Moseki. Want to assist us in one way or another.
But I was just saying that I think the summary should be accompanied by appreciating and comment the quick response by the provincial commissioner when she's requested to come and at the effective manner in which she handled this matter that she presented to us. We really appreciate that. She should just not just feel, as Honorable Mzize said earlier on, that the session is not about interrogation. It's about really seeking to understand what really prevailed today. Keep it up, madam. Thank you very much.
Well said, Ramoseki. Well said. I'm not going to spoil it. But my question to you, Provincial Commissioner, I wonder if it was not you who was responding to this question, what was going to happen? If it was not you who was responding to these questions, I forget what I'm trying to say. You get my point. I wonder what was going to happen. As Honorable Mahota said, we'll be here until whenever. So, when the event comes. On that note, I'm told that there is food ready down there. If you're not rushing for planes, Monica, you can escort them to the old assembly restaurant. Let them eat before they leave. Unless they'll be rushing for planes. I'm referring to the provincial commissioner, the station commissioner, and ICT. Thanks very much. You are excused, madam. Thanks very much. I don't see defense. What is defense here? Because while waiting for it, because I said the Department of Defense, they must come when we are done with this case. I want to make a very progressive proposal here, Honorable Ntuli. I want to make a very progressive proposal that we for now, I adjourn for only 10 minutes. But before we go out, we resume in that last to deal with one particular item, then we'll be done. It won't take even 5 minutes. Where we'll convene now as the local government committee. So that we deal with one item, then after that item, then because defense is here, I think what we're going to do with defense, I've got a proposal to make. I'm not going to keep everybody here, but I know what to propose to defense. But can I get a feeling there's one item that we have to deal with quickly in local government, colleagues, as you know that I'm acting in that capacity as well. Thank you very much. The SLED Committee on Security and Cultural Affairs will adjourn for 10 minutes. It's adjourned. Thank you very much. Now, colleagues, can we resume now as local government? Local government is now in session. But let me thank our two colleagues, Tadeli Ale and Babu Mahote. Thank you very much for participation, my leaders. As you have heard, food is ready down there. Let's go and enjoy it. Thank you very much.
Now, colleagues, we are now in local government. As you are aware, that yours truly has been appointed to act in this committee. But as you are aware, the load in this in that Arat cluster is heavy. I can't act forever. So we are going to elect the permanent chairperson of this Select Committee on Local Government. And without any waste of time, Moses here, where is the office of Zanelle? They're supposed to be here, but it's fine. I think Moses will take care of that. We'll take care of it. Colleagues, today it's a time where we're to elect the permanent chairperson of this committee. Can I look for proposals? Honorable Museki?
Chairperson, my name is Letsogile Museki. I propose the name of Bojis Mokgaletsi. Thank you.
The proposal of B.J. Buti Mokgaletsi has been proposed. Any seconder? Honorable Ntuli.
I, Chris Ntuli, second Honorable Moseki that the name of Mokgaletsi Buti Mokgaletsi as the chairperson of the local government and traditional affairs.
Thank you very much. Is there any other name that is being proposed? Honorable Leroux, Honorable West, is there any other name that is being proposed? 3, 2, 1, gone. Since there is no any other proposed name, I want to declare that Honorable B.J. Mokgaletsi was duly elected by this committee to be the permanent chairperson of the State Committee on Local Government and Public Service. Congratulations, Honorable Mokgaletsi. Welcome to the cluster. I know you are not the newcomer here. You have been part of us since then up until now. Can I invite Honorable Mokgaletsi to come and take his chair, please? Thank you very much. Chairperson, can you come and take your seat, please?
Good afternoon, honorable members and our visitors and officials. Surely one appreciates the kind of task that you've put into my hands. I'm sure you are part of also of those who will be pushing this workload forward. I'm still learning the ropes in this committee, and we will be soon be assembling with the whip of the committee, the secretariat, and in the form of a management, and we will be carrying things forward in that fashion. Of course, we are thankful for Honorable Hoshi Mokoena for keeping the committee going. I have no doubt that you will continue to support us as we go forward with our work. Thank you very much. I think Honorable Hoshi, this meeting is now adjourned.
Is there any proposal people want to make? Because
The Select Committee on Security and Cultural Affairs is now in session. Thanks very much, Chair. Hi, this committee. But I wonder, Honorable Leru, if Museneke is aware of what we are doing here, you know? Honorable Dr. Van Heerden, you know, because as our spokesperson and our shop steward there in that committee of parliament that is dealing with Museneke, I wonder if he's aware that you are doing this kind of a job here.
Chairperson, I'm sure he's not doing his job. But I can't, we're going so quickly from one committee to the next committee that I'm afraid I'm going to miss my flight. But, I, you know, from outside, I would just like to say to Mr. Kalipi that we're very fortunate to have a man of his character to lead us forward, and he will find us supporting all the good things that he wants to achieve. Thank you, sir.
Doc?
Yes, I endorse what colleague. I don't like to agree with the DA, but in this regard, I've got to. But I endorse what he says about Mr. Kalipi. Thank you.
I concur, sir. ANC, how are we?
We concur with the
DA.
DA. And
very surprising, you know. Verem, what have you done to the ANC? Jesus. You know, I got so worried. Yeah, colleagues, welcome to Umgawate and the team, Defense. Yeah, what I'm going to say, colleagues, we agree that we're going to break at 1. No maganja. Mutatis mutandis. Utando atand. We're going to break at 1. I'm not going to do any other strange thing today, but that you check members after the briefing yesterday, after the brilliant briefing yesterday by the department. But there might be some questions that you want them to clarify. I'm just going to open the space today for us to ask questions to the department. If there are questions based on the briefing that we had yesterday about the National Convention Arms Control Amendment Bill. Any question? Because if there are no questions, I'll set the meeting adjourned, then they'll go. Then when they come next week, we vote on the bill, and then it's passed. I don't think that's what they want, you know. They want to be grilled. What I like about this department, always when we're having this bill, we go all over. You remember last time we went as far as Northwest, where we passed the bill somewhere? We're in Northwest. Even now, I suspect we might end up being with them at in Northwest or in KwaZulu-Natal or Eastern Cape when we take Parliament to the people. Yeah, any question? Honorable West, Honorable Mzizi, Honorable Museki. Yeah, Bara West.
Thanks, Chair. Yes, my questions are brief. I'd just like to know, I have been conferring with other colleagues, I must admit, in the NA with regard to this bill. There is a clause number, and also our research department came up with section number 17 of the bill with regard to the secrecy clause, that is where a customer demand secrecy. I just want to confirm, I believe it has been agreed that Parliament will be informed in either a confidential briefing or a closed session with regard to arms sales to persons where, as I said, the customer demands a confidentiality. I just want to know if that is correct, and is it just the NA that will be informed, the National Assembly, or will also this committee of the NCOP also be briefed in future? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. That was the Honourable West, Honourable Mzizi.
Chairperson, Mkabateli has actually attempted to answer all the questions, but the only thing that remains is that where it probably speaks of NA, it should not speak of NA where the report should go. It should go to Parliament. And if it goes to Parliament, then encapsulate us as well. I think that will suffice. But yesterday they were grilled, and they came up very well. Thank you, sir.
Thanks very much, Honorable Moseki.
No, Chair, you know, earlier on I was going to say that, you know, this team responded to questions very well yesterday, very brilliantly, so we should not go to the question session. But on the second thought, I thought that, Chairperson, I should just clarify one small thing about the annual report to be electronically publicized on the website. It's going to be on the website, the annual report. Just to check also if there will be a hard copy distributed, particularly to us, because it only talks about the website here. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Any other question? Now, the compilation of the what do you call them? Controlled items. How are we to do that? To compile the list of controlled items. How do we compile a list of those items? Because I know they'll be in the hands of other people. The person Jigan is looking at me with that. The controlled items. How are you going to be driving the list of those controlled items? How do you compile the list of the controlled items? Let's respond those questions. I'm going to make my day today. You'll be surprised. I'm going to make my day. The responses, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. It is our honor again to appear before this committee, and we appreciate the questions that have been directed to us. I would attempt to deal with them, and obviously from time to time I would rely on the assistance of my colleagues. On the first question that I've been asked, on the issue of secrecy and how information that is secret will be made known to Parliament. I must say, whilst we are going through this particular provision of the Act, at the level of the National Assembly, there's an issue that we had to deal with at length. And what we came up with as a position that would stand, and I suppose the committee may support that, is that from time to time there are contracts in defence or in defence industry that are of such a nature that they are confidential. They are not secret. I think we've tried to make a distinction between that. They are confidential, meaning that they can only be accessed by people on a need-to-know basis. And as such, if a contract is of such a nature, the NCCC and Defence Department would not preclude Parliament from accessing such information. So that to say, we would make such information known to Parliament. And to us, Parliament refers to all houses of Parliament. And as it says here on the bill itself, under on page 10 of the bill, section 23.4. If I can just draw your attention there, it says, in the case of information contemplated in subsection 3b2, meaning confidential information, the committee must submit such information to Parliament on confidential basis. That is to say, would make information known to Parliament in all detail. However, therefore, Parliament and the NCCC would have to agree on how to deal with the information moving beyond Parliament. Because some other time there are certain considerations that we need to make, but we will never keep such information away from Parliament. And I think that is how the bill is drafted at present, and that is the intent that we seek to implement once we come at implementation stage. The second question that Honorable Mzizi had asked about Parliament versus National Assembly, as I said, in our view, once the report is tabled, it will be tabled to Parliament, and Parliament will therefore determine within itself whether whatever House of Parliament, but would ensure as the NCCC that the reports are delivered to Parliament. and we'll be advised then from time to time what would be the right place where that deposit of reports will happen. But we just take Parliament as inclusive of all the houses that are there. The third question that Honorable Muteki had asked is about whether the reports that the NCECC would be submitting to Parliament, whether such reports will be publicised on a website. And the answer is affirmative. It's yes. But such publication on the website would only happen after Parliament has considered such reports. And for us, our first obligation is to come to Parliament and provide such reports to Parliament. And after deliberation and adoption by Parliament, they will therefore move a step further to say, this therefore can be put on a website. But I think our first port of call will be Parliament, and therefore moving forward. And obviously then we'll therefore find that information that we consider to be confidential, as I've referred to earlier, may or may not have to go to the website, obviously because of security as well as defense interests that may be compromised if you go beyond that point. The question that the chairperson had asked, again, the salvo that you put through, is about how do you compile the list of controlled items. Yesterday, we tried at length to say how do we want to deal with controlled items, and we said just to repeat, we would want to say controlled items refer to three items. It refers in the first instance to conventional arms, in the second instance to dual use goods, in the third instance to technologies and services. And the question is, therefore, most often than not, currently, you find there's a lot of disagreement and agreement on what constitutes this or that. How we're going to define, therefore, controlled items, we're going to do so by this list. And I had said yesterday, there is already documentation that is the internationally recognized documentation that says, this is what is recognized internationally as conventional arms. This is what is considered to be dual-use goods. This one is considered to be services. And all that we'll be doing, therefore, is to take those lists, adapt them a little bit for the purposes of South Africa, and publish them as the list, so that if a person will have to, wants to know whether something is a controlled item or not, he will therefore go to that list and say, under conventional arm, is my rifle that I have, the military rifle that I have, does it fall under the controlled item? And obviously there will be a section that says weapons of this kind, assault rifles and this and that and the other. And the publication obviously may even go down to details about the mechanics behind that, because I think some of these items can be best defined through the formulas that there is. Maybe I can ask Kenneth Apsi to speak a little bit about the technical aspects of that. But those are the things that will go there, so that when a person looks at that, there will be no doubt that this is a conventional arm as listed there. This is a dual use good. This is a service. And this list will be updated on a yearly basis. Obviously, as I said, technology changes every day. What was considered to be absolute technology yesterday, today it's common technology, and vice versa. And we'll therefore ensure that these lists are published every year to take into account the reality of development out there. And that is how we're going to deal with that, Chairperson. And we will therefore not get into interpreting. And obviously, I must say, how, therefore, are we going to agree on the list? Obviously, we'll have the Wassenaar list as a guideline. We'll engage with relevant stakeholders, maybe people who are experts in those areas. They may be lying in defense industry. They may be lying in institutes of higher learning, universities, your engineering departments, and all of that. And those are the people who will, therefore, help us in defining in very clear terms what those items are, because we have to find and make an adaptation of that list to South African situation, and we're going to be doing that. And that is how Shepherds are going to do that. And if an item is not listed on that list, the implication, therefore, is that it is not a controlled item. We're controlling that by listing. If it's there, therefore it's controlled. If it's not there, the assumption is that it is not controlled. Maybe, Chair, if I can ask our technical advisor to just reflect on the issues of how the VASNAR works and how the items are categorized.
Before the Colonel gets onto the detail, the technical things, this VASNAR list, as far as I remember, that's not in the Act, isn't it? The ideal situation may be just to refer to the VASNAR list and indicate what it is all about. I'm completely ignorant about this thing, and I apologize for my ignorance if it is in the Act and I misunderstood the representation yesterday. If we can just get clarity before...
Maybe before Colonel Apsi comes in, the VASNAR thing was raised by Umzizi even yesterday. The VASNAR, whatever you call it.
Yep. Thanks, Chairperson. I think just to clarify that, I think in the current legislation, as you look at it now, in the NCEC Act, there are regulations that are attached to that. And those regulations, attached to those regulations, is the entire document. It goes to about 120, 30 pages, which is the VASNAR list. And that is the list that is there. But what had happened in the current setup is that by attaching the VASNAR list on the NCECC Act, you are therefore creating the impression that it is only administered by the NCECC under that Act. But the reality of the situation is that VASNAR talks about quite a number of things. It talks about military weapons. It talks about commercial weapons. It talks about weapons of mass destruction and materials in there. And I said yesterday that currently you've got police who are dealing with commercial firearms. And we are going to take the VASNAR, and the component of VASNAR that relates to commercial firearms will be administered by the SAPS, as they already do in the Firearms Control Act now. Now it's not referred to as VASNAR, but what they are seeking to deal with, they are commercial firearms, which is what the VASNAR talks about in the relevant section. We are going to take the part of the VASNAR that relates to WMDs and materials related to it, and let that be administered by the Non-Proliferation Council that deals with the weapons of mass destruction, biological weapons and chemical and all of that. And what the NCECC will therefore deal with is to deal with conventional arms, because the nature of the NCECC is to deal with conventional arms and related items. And that aspect, therefore, will fall under the NCECC. But how, therefore, it will be attached there, we will not say it is a VASNAR attachment. We will say it is a control list because it's a guideline. VASNAR is an international document. But we're going to take VASNAR, split that between various agencies, and the components that relates to conventional arms, it will be under that. And you'll never find that in the Act, in the current form, there would not be reference to VASNAR. There would be reference to control list. But all that we're saying is that how we are going to be defining the control list, we're going to define that by referring to the VASNAR, which is a document that sets out the methodology of defining items in terms of their application, whether they are dual use goods, whether they are military, and how they are actually the mechanics behind that.
Sorry. Are you on the same issue?
Yes, on the same issue. Sorry, Chair, just to come in here. You know, it is so vague, the bill at the moment, all due respect, it just says controlled list. It means nothing. Just the bill just refers to controlled list. If they had to put the controlled list brackets as defined list VASNAR, or as defined VASNAR list, close brackets, it would make sense. Then there's some list you're referring to. But just to say controlled items, I don't know. That's how effective that is in law. Thanks, Jay.
Okay, no, we'll look into that. Maybe if there might be some new formulation when it comes to that. But Colonel Apsi, can you come in now?
Thank you, Chairperson. The VASNAR arrangement, as you mentioned yesterday, is a kind of a club of 40 nations where South Africa was permitted to join in 2006 after we demonstrated to them that we were a responsible country, where we published in the regulations the VASNAR list as it came out. It comes out every year as a new version. We published the 2003 version of the VASNAR list in the regulations, and on that basis we were regarded as being serious about what we were doing, and then we were permitted to join this club in 2006. It meets in Geneva every year, and there are various technical meetings as well as meetings for licensing officers to tell them to how to enforce the licensing of the lists that it puts out. Now, it puts out basically two lists. The one list is dual-use goods and technologies list. And on that, the intention of this is equipment or materials or processes, not really exactly processes, but equipment and basically equipment and technologies that could be used in a terrorist-like environment. So we're talking about swimming pool chemicals that can be modified and you can make a bomb out of it. Also bearing in mind this is a focus on conventional armaments as opposed to nuclear, biological, and chemical, although it does have certain materials in there that can be used in that domain, but its primary focus is that in the conventional arms and to stop the proliferation of conventional arms outside of control. And these lists is about a 280-page document of lists, of the two lists together, but on the dual-use goods list, for example, if someone goes to an auction sale in America and buys a submarine diesel engine, that is effectively controlled on this list if its power output is more than 1.5 megawatt of power, because the submarine engine is very specialized. If you go and buy one and put it on your fishing trawler and its power output is more than 1.5, it is actually controlled. Another example is flares, for example, if on the military list there are flares that when an aircraft is coming in to land, it ejects flares to stop people shooting missiles at it to act as a decoy, and they will confuse the missile and cause it to explode away from the aircraft. The civil industry has realized that these are very handy to have on, for example, a DHL aircraft coming into a place like Afghanistan to land, and it wants also to eject or confuse missiles coming up to it, although it's a commercial aircraft. These flares need to be controlled as well, and they want to buy the same thing, but now there's a special arrangement being made that this can be placed on the dual-use goods list, where it's used for commercial purposes, and a similar one is used for military purposes. The military one can set fire to an airfield because these flares keep burning and they burn at the hotter temperatures, etc. They can set fire to civil airfield, but the ones that are used in the civilian use are specially designed so that by the time they reach the ground, they've burnt out. And so we have a typical example of a dual-use item where the military one and there's a civil one, and that's now controlled. The idea being that you want to control this thing because you don't want to have a terrorist organization getting hold of this machine which they mount onto the aircraft and it ejects flares, because if they want to attack a vulnerable target, for example, some presidential house, and this is mounted to a homemade missile and they launch it, and as it's flying towards the presidential house, for example, it can't be shot down because it's ejecting these flares, and every defense system that's firing missiles to bring this thing down can't stop it. So they want to control that. They want to know where this thing is going. Is it going? And what they've done on that list is to say, if you buy one of these for commercial purposes, you have to put things in there that it can only talk to the aircraft you sell it to, and when you take it off that aircraft, it won't work on somebody else's backyard missile system. That type of checks and balances are built into this thing. And on that dual list, there are various other chemicals and things where you can make bombs and all kinds of serious weapons. It also controls industrial machinery that are very accurate. And the idea of that is a very accurate machine can be used to grind the lenses on a missile nose cone. So, for example, if you are making, again, illegal weapons or weapons for some other unrecognized military activity, you don't want to get those machines out into the private sector without control. So a very, very accurate machine, for example, a milling machine, it's like a three-dimensional cutting machine that operates at the accuracies of 4 microns or more accurate than that, is a controlled item. Now, a micron is a very small distance. A micron, they say, is the amount of time it takes for you to come to shave in the morning, where you put down, where you turn on the hot water tap to put some soap on your face, and by the time you put the soap on the face and you reach for your razor, your beard has grown by 1 micron. So we're talking very accurate high technology equipment here. So that is now on the dual use goods list. It covers propulsion, laser sensors, a various long list of scientifically grouped categories of equipment on the dual use goods side. Then on the military list, it is hardcore military stuff that's easy to identify: tanks, guns, battleships, submarines, camouflage nets, etc., combat equipment, of engineer equipment that are used for launching, bridging, combat, armor plate. There's a typical example. Armor plate, it appears on both lists. It appears on the dual-use goods list as a technology. If you have a bulletproof vest made of armor, and South Africa has one of 3 factories in the world that make ceramic armor plates that the police officers use in their vests, the idea being that it is a control, that technology level is controlled on the dual-use goods list because it is used in the private sector. That same product, it looks like a dinner plate, but that same product which you can put in your vest, the police officer, the same product you can build into the air intake of a power generation system at a coal-fired power station, because they crush coal into dust and they feed that into the air intake of a big boiler that's, you know, with a big hot water cooker there that makes the steam for the steam turbine. But when they feed that coal dust and it goes around the corner and goes into the boiler, it wears away the steel pipe, the coal dust, and after a couple of months you will wear away the hole in the pipe. So what they do is they make special bricks out of the same stuff that they use in the bulletproof vest, and they glue those bricks inside the pipe. Now the factory that makes that is making bricks today and is making armor plate tomorrow. And you have to draw a line. This is a typical example of dual-use goods. You're making bricks that you put inside the pipes for commercial application, and the next day you're making bulletproof vests. These particular bulletproof vests are a lower order of technology than the very high-tech ones, which use different additives in there, and even those additives are controlled. So there's various nuances associated with these sort of...
Now we got it. We got it. Even though it's a bit scary now, but we got it. Mgawate, it's going to come in. Can you keep your mic? Can I ask?
I think, Chairman, let's try again to deal with the matters of law. This is a technical aspect. I think my colleague will try to respond to the question that the doctor had asked around the issues and honourable words about how do we relate control items to the act? Can that be implemented in a court of law if you were to want to prosecute on the basis of that?
Thank you very much, Chair. I want to see if I could try and assist the committee with regard to this issue. And I think, Chair, it's proper that we start from what Mr. Laza was saying earlier on about the Wassenaar list. Now I will speak of it in general terms as opposed to what the panel was doing. I think the point that Mr. Laza was trying to make was that Wassenaar list is broader than conventional arms. It deals with other issues that are governed by other pieces of legislation, like the firearms, like the WMD, and various other issues. So it is not specific to conventional arms. So what we have tried to do in the bill then is not to refer to the Wassenaar list, because it's broader than what we seek to regulate here. But what we do, though, in the definition of controlled items in the bill, we speak of a notice published by the committee in the Gazette. Now, in that list which will be published, we will zoom in specifically on the items that should be governed or regulated by this act. Now, the danger of referring to Wassenaar list in general terms is that you may end up regulating issues that are being regulated by other acts, like the Firearms Control Act, the Non-Proliferation, and various other acts. So here, what we're trying to do really is to create certainty, so that every individual within South Africa can know with certainty what are the specific items that are controlled under this Act. And the police, with regard to firearms, will take the relevant part in respect of their Act, and DTI will take the relevant part with regard to weapons of mass destruction. So we cannot, in the content of this bill, refer to vast nationalists, because we will be broadening this Act beyond what we're trying to regulate here. You will remember yesterday we spoke of the issue of cross-referencing, why we are listing all the kind of other kind of acts as electronic communications, nuclear energy, and all those things. But we're trying to create space for all the other agencies to be able to continue to regulate issues they are empowered by law to regulate. But we're just empowering the NCACC in terms of this one to specifically take out all the conventional arms within the Wassenaar list. So in the presentation, we refer to the Wassenaar list as just an illustration of how we will arrive at the end, how we will arrive at the list that will be published in terms of this one. So the concern is not to refer to the Wassenaar list because it is broader than conventional arms. But there will still be certainty in as far as we will publish a specific list that will list what is in the Wassenaar list and govern in terms of this Act. I hope, Chair, I've been able to assist the committee.
Chair, just as a final attempt here, if you look at the definition of control item on page 3 of the bill, it would say a control item on page 3, it says control item means item specified in a notice published by the committee in a gazette. Those are the list. And it says here, in terms of section 27.3, and if you go therefore to page 13 of the bill, which is at section 27.3, it therefore tells you in broad terms what we're talking about. It says there, on page 13, paragraph 3, under the bolded, it says, the committee may, by notice in a gazette, publish a list of control items to which this Act is applicable, including, and it specifies A, B, C, D. As you can see, the A part says weapons, munitions, explosives, bombs, armaments, vessels, vehicles, aircraft designed or manufactured for use in war, or any other articles. So let us say, those are conventional arms. So we'll therefore provide a list of those items. And if you go to a B, it therefore says, any component, equipment, system, process, and technology of whatever nature capable of being used in the design, development, and manufacture, upgrading, refurbishment, and it goes right up to the end. And as you can see there, therefore, there we are just specifically talking now about component parts of the systems referred to in A. And in C, it talks about products and technologies, and those are dual-use goods, as you can see there. And in D, it talks about services. And you're saying, we're going to publish a list of services as listed in Roman figure 1 up to there. Advice, assistance, training, product support, and all of that. So let's say the list that will be publishing would speak to these matters. Would speak to A in terms of conventional arms, speak to B in terms of component parts, speak to C in terms of dual-use goods, speak to D into that is services that are related to that. So that is how, Chairperson, I think this list will not be a free-for-all. It will address these particular aspects. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, becoming so interesting. Can I appeal to my colleagues and members? Let's go and look into this, some of these things. And if there are some amendments that you think you might want to bring, I will allow for that space in our next meeting. And what I want to request to members is that if I had my way, I want us to pass this bill as quickly as we can, but I'm not going to push it through, even while we still want to engage the department. I'm doing that because, as you're aware, immediately after next week, we'll be very busy in terms of attending to the DSO bills. So I'm not in any way trying to coerce members not to do their work as they used to do. But as far as I'm concerned, this bill is very clear. I can just give notice that in the next meeting, I'll ask a question as to why do we use the end-user certificate, and on the other hand, we're using permits and stuff. I know end-users, sometimes it's when you export some other things.
But I'll ask that in our next meeting. I'm not asking it now, but I'm just giving notice. Yeah. Okay, Doc, is your hand up?
So I just want you to know, nothing in this regard. I want to get back to our program, what you're referring to is opals, but not in this regard, nothing.
Thanks very much. No, I think I want to make a day of the department because I'm going to stop questions now so that I you know. And if you're nice to me, you know, next meeting I'm going to pass this bill. If you're nice to me from today and then when we meet. But that's control item, yes. Control items, yes. No, I think let's tell the department, you know, we can say that this thing, it's here in their fingertips. They are clear about this thing. It's clear. It's so exciting to see officials who, you know, who can respond to questions just like that. It really it makes us smile. You know? That's very good. Colleagues, I think we are done for the day, but I don't want to address us in terms of the program before we adjourn. Because I also invite the department to join us for... You know, I'm serving nice lunch. I'm not serving just ordinary junk, you know. Just go to the old assembly restaurant and enjoy it. Thanks very much, department. You can, in the meantime, quietly sneak out to go and enjoy our lunch there. But if you are rushing for your planes, by all means, I will accept it. What I'm doing, I'm sending a notice to say, my surprise in our next meeting that we might pass this bill. So I'll be lobbying other parties and members so that you know next meeting will pass this bill. And I know you want to implement this amendment as quickly as you can, you know. So if I succeed, if I can get hold of Dr. Van Herden and otherwise I'm done. I'll do that. And doctor, I'll be with the doctor for the whole week next week. I can't fail. I think I'll be able to persuade him when we're busy in the JSC. I'll try my best. If I fail, I'll call you and say, hey, chief. Colleagues, is there anything you want to raise with me? Nothing. Doc?
Yes, only the rest of the program because, you know, okay, next week we've got our program for next week, but you refer to that we are going to be very busy after next week. And if you can just give us an indication because we've got to make arrangements in the constituency chairperson. You refer to what is years opals. Yeah. If we can just have an indication, chairperson. I don't want to miss the meetings, but if I according to the program as it is at this stage, we don't have anything after the 22nd. Okay, 22nd. I understand that we are supposed to go to what's a place called Newcastle. Most indicated that, but. Amajuba or something like that. But chairperson, are we going to be busy with it on the 27th as well? I don't know. If you can just give us an indication so that we can plan, please.
Yeah, in fact, I'll liaise with my colleague, the chairperson of the other committee, Mkhalid, and I'll urge our two secretaries, Moss and Grace, to also meet to try and just refine our problems. But what is clear is that immediately after the DSO bills are passed by the National Assembly on the 21st of October, those bills will be passed by the National Assembly. Now, immediately, I say after a day or two, it will be, as you are aware, to be referred to the NCOP. We'll accommodate the program, the interventions into provinces, local government, because... there are deadlines to be met, as you're aware, Doc, in terms of the Constitution. If we meet that deadline, you know the consequences thereof. Now, what we're trying to do, I'll talk to my colleague to see if we can condense the visits to provinces to be 1 week, so the other week we do the other stuff. But if it's not possible, we might meet even wherever we'll be as this committee. Wherever we'll be, local government, you know, we've done that before. We do the visit, this oversight, these interventions. Let's say whatever Monday, Tuesday. Who knows? Maybe Wednesday, Thursday. We'll be in that particular province. We can meet there and continue rather than jumping up and down, you know, and so on.
it's possible, or even after we've visited one municipality, we can converge now as this last to continue. But give us a chance, Doc, until the two secretaries met, because I'm going to tell them to meet from tomorrow. No, from tomorrow they'll be meeting. Even from today, they'll be meeting, because this afternoon we don't have any meeting. I said I'll release you earlier, I'm going to do that. When we're again now, we're not meeting this afternoon. So the secretaries will meet and try to refine our program. Then I suspect when we are, we'll be in the JSC, we'll be having the program. And it will be also circulated to our, to other members so that they know before they leave tomorrow to their respective provinces, so that they have the program in hand as to exactly how we're going to handle the two engagements. Thanks as much.
Jefferson, don't forget, on the 23rd of October, there will be a launching of a book. NCOP members all are supposed to be there. Thank you.
Yeah, the WIP, WIP Nyanda, she's reminding us that there's an invite that all NCOP members had to attend that launching of the book somewhere. Let me thank everybody and invite everybody who is in this room to join me when we enjoy our juicy, delicious, sumptuous, and whatever you can call it meal at all the same restaurant. The meeting is adjourned.